Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, October 12th, 2013. This is episode 1021. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. No startup cost, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT.
Let me powder my nose a little bit here for the television. Wait a minute, it's radio. Hello, everybody. How are you? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. You see how tan I am? That's because I have returned from 3 weeks in the Mediterranean. Not the ocean, but the area. Hello there, call screener, the phone ranger, Heather Hammond. How are you today?
Great. How are you? You good. Do look really good.
Tan? Well, not no. Don't go that far. But I am tanned. Tanned.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like that fake newscaster makeup.
It does look orange, doesn't it? Actually, the truth is, I was in Indiana and I just put orange tan on. No, I was. I was in Italy and Greece and Croatia and Montenegro and Turkey for 3 weeks.
Beautiful.
Lots of pictures that I have brought back with me. Had a great old time anyway, and I missed y'all, and I'm glad to be able to get back here and talk tech. Did anything happen, anything at all, while I was gone? I see somebody got a new iPhone. Ms. H.
What?
Did you not?
I got the MacBook Air.
Oh, you got a MacBook Air. I saw you were in an Apple store, that's all.
Oh,
so you
right.
got a MacBook Air.
My check-in. I did. I love it.
But you didn't get a new phone, huh? Because you have an iPhone 4.
S.
Yes. Not tempted by the fingerprint scanner, huh?
No.
Have you updated to iOS 7?
Nope.
You listened to me. Good, good. Now is safe, by the way. Because, in fact, the rule of thumb on any operating system upgrade, particularly from Apple, is don't, when it first comes out, it's hard. I know. Hold off. And then there'll be an update, which there was almost immediately. Don't do that one. You want to do the update that fixes what broke from this first update.
Right.
So that's where we are now on the iPhone 7.02, the second update to iOS 7, and it is fine. Except it's giving people a blue screen of death in some cases. You know the old Windows thing when Windows would crash, you'd get a blue screen? I don't know why Apple chose to do a blue screen. But apparently iWork is the culprit, and iWork crashes in some cases. I've tried it; it doesn't crash my iPhone 5S, but crashes the iPhone 5S. So I'm sure that'll be fixed. But it's kind of ironic that you can get a blue screen of death on an iPhone. It's a computer. Just reminds everybody it's a computer. iOS 7 on the iPad. Yeah, I think it's safe to upgrade too. Now, I still have my complaints about the swoopy-doopy nature of it. The icons whoosh, fly in and whoosh, fly out. But I have to say, it doesn't seem as bad on the new iPhone 5S. And I guess it's because it's such a fast processor. It's a more fluid thing and it's not as annoying. But, it's a little annoying on the older iPads. The other news, 10 days hence, we're pretty sure, a week from Tuesday, Apple's going to have another announcement, October 22nd. And that would almost certainly be new iPads. Last year, on October 23rd, Apple released all new everything. I mean, they updated everything that they hadn't already updated. And within two events, in September and October of 2012, Apple updated all their products except for one, the Mac Pro. That's the other one that'll be, I believe, updated on October 22nd. So new iPads for sure. Some question about what these iPads will look like. The fifth generation 9.7-inch iPad should probably be very similar. Rumors are it'll look a lot like the iPad mini with rounded edges, the pictures we've seen, rounded corners, rounded, thinner form factor. Probably a faster processor. The iPhone 5S has a much, much, much faster processor, like twice as fast. So I'd expect the same thing in a new iPad. The real question that remains, and I'll watch with interest, is will Apple release a new iPad mini with a Retina display? And I would be very happy to see that. The Mini is the last mobile device Apple makes that doesn't have a super high-res display. And I think it makes a big difference. I do. So we'll watch. We'll watch. We'll see. I don't know what they can do to the big iPad. I don't know much what they could do. Maybe put a better camera in it. One thing I noticed as I'm traveling around the world is how many people use their iPads, whether it's minis or full size iPads, as their camera. You, especially if you got the big iPad, especially if it's in a case. And there was one woman who was on most of our tours who had a full size iPad with a case, and the case is flapping in the wind, you know, the lid of it, as she takes pictures everywhere. It's a monster. But I predicted this would happen, and there are reasons why it makes sense. It's not a great camera, but it's an okay camera. It's better than a lot of the point-and-shoots of a few years ago. And it has a great viewfinder. You can't deny that. A 9.7-inch viewfinder. So you really know what you're getting a picture of. You can't, you know, it doesn't have a lot of controls of it. I'd love to see a better camera on the iPad. In acknowledgement, really, that people are using it as a photographer, as a camera for photography. Somebody in the chat room, Emlyn, says maybe GPS on the Wi-Fi models. Maybe. I don't know if people even know that. You know, the Wi-Fi model of the iPad does not have a GPS device in it. I brought the Mini with me on my trip, and it was perfect for playing Plants vs. Zombies 2 on the long plane ride. That's about all I used it for. But if you watched TV or movies, it'd be okay. You know, it's a good size. It's fairly portable. But it's got a decent screen, decent size screen. I would love to see a high-res screen on that. I would love to see that. Anyway, so that's we'll find out. A week from Tuesday, we'll find out what Apple has up its sleeve. I do have a couple of new products to talk about this weekend. I'm going to talk about the, of course, iPhone 5S, which I thank you, Josh Windisch. His wife, Vanessa, works at an Apple store. Because I was unable to get an iPhone 5S before I left. It was announced, but wasn't out yet. And I'm in Italy, and I'm looking. And by the time I was able to get to the Apple store, it said, "Oh yeah, you'll get that sometime in October." Now it's November, if you order online. But if your timing is good when you get to an Apple store, they get them in every day or a few days. So if your timing is good and you arrive when the new, you know, shipment comes in, you can often pick one up right away. And that's what she did for me. Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you, Josh. So I've had a chance to play with it, and I'll give you a fuller review, but a thumbnail review, very similar to the iPhone 5, much faster. That's good. And the fingerprint reader works quite well. And I tell you, I love unlocking the phone with my thumbprint. You know, just putting my thumb on it and holding it there for a second and unlocking it. That's so nice. I really like the ability to purchase apps and music without entering in my password, because I, being a secure fella, have a long, elaborate, complicated password. It's a pain to have to enter it, but you just put now when you're buying stuff, and it only works right now in the Apple stuff, in the iTunes store, or the Apple App Store. But when you put your thumbprint on there, boom, it opens it up. I say thumb, but you can get up to 5 different fingers. In fact, one of the things Apple does, which I think is really interesting, you register a fingerprint, your first fingerprint, and after you do it a few times, it says, okay, I got that, but I want you to hold the phone differently, use the same finger. So to kind of accommodate for the fact that when you hold the phone with a different grip, maybe the thumb is a little bit of a different angle or whatever. And then you could do that up to 5 different times. So I did a couple of different grips, a couple of different fingers. It's very convenient. So I'm happy to see them do that. Of course, that puts pressure on all the other phone manufacturers to do something similar. So I expect we'll see these fingerprint readers all over the place. Whether they'll be as well implemented as Apple's is really perfect. It's really nicely done. That remains to be seen. But yeah, it's great, and I'd like to see it. Now let's get my credit card attached. Let's get the passport attached. Let's start using this for authentication in a variety of ways. I love that. Maybe LastPass will support it. Yes, I got the gold one. I know I mocked it, but it's pretty. And gold feels so rich. All right, phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. I'll talk a little bit more about the iPhone 5S and the other thing that I got coming up. But first, your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Apple doesn't call it champagne. They call it gold. Goldfinger. He's the man with the modest touch. He's got the gold iPhone. It's a very light gold. It's not a, it's not, you know. In fact, in this camera shot, it doesn't even look gold, does it? It looks kind of silvery almost. So it is champagne. That is the appropriate description. But Apple calls it gold. I really like it. I think it's a good change of pace. And so this is the fingerprint reader right here. And all you do is you just...
You should get it as your
ringtone. Actually, I had the James Bond theme as my ringtone. But for this phone, I should have Goldfinger. It's an option on the iPhone?
Yeah, well, you can buy it.
Oh, you can buy it?
Yeah.
He's the man with the mud. So, it's an iPhone. What is there to say? It's a good camera, good flash. I'm liking it. I don't
You're
know if I'll go to
it. Gold? It looks silver.
If you saw it, you see there's a slight gold tinge to it.
Want
to
see my new device?
Yeah. Do you love it? Are you glad you got it?
I've only had it a little bit, but I am loving it.
Oh, you should love it.
You know what I found out?
Far out. What?
Is that it is still a little bit hard to watch The Daily Show.
Why?
I don't get that spinning color wheel of death, but it chokes a little.
Well, that's not the computer.
I know, but I love that I discovered that. I was like, oh, okay.
It's not the computer. You mean you bought a new computer so you would watch The Daily Show without a spinning beach ball?
Oh, my God. It was just absolutely grinding the wheels.
Yeah, but that thing is a lot faster, and you will notice that. And what you really notice is the better battery life. It's astounding.
Yeah, and it's light, and it's so beautiful.
Oh, you've never had an Air before?
I haven't dropped it yet.
No, Airs are fabulous.
Didn't you see my computer? It was the old
white. Yeah, the white one, yeah.
Workhorse thing.
No, I'm glad you got that.
Which two people are asking me if they can buy it off me. Can you believe that?
Wow.
I haven't gazelled it yet. I didn't think
Good.
I'd get anything.
You don't need to.
Just take me on a nice dinner and you can have it.
Hey, so, and the other big news is you had a good internet date.
What makes you think that?
Oh, I thought you said that.
I think I did have a good internet date, but then he went crazy. So.
Really? Gosh darn it.
Oh, my God.
What's wrong with men today?
Real. Let's save that for another break, because
okay.
I'd actually like to ask some people what they would do in this situation. I'm like literally like calling my ex-boyfriend now, like, hey, what are you doing these days?
Oh, that's bad.
You're starting to look really
He's looking better, huh?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's every guy's dream. See, I wasn't that bad, was I? Okay, I know I wasn't great, but I wasn't that bad.
I helped you paint your bedroom.
Blah, blah, blah.
We didn't have enough time in Venice to have really great Italian food. We had a few. I didn't do a Venice very well. I didn't plan it very well. But one thing I did do is I got a photographer to give us a photographic tour, and that was awesome. Awesome. That worked great. Look at the meter. It's just pegged. The boy's back in town, baby. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, back from vacation, but I hope you enjoyed those shows. We made all new shows for you. We prepared them ahead of time, pre-baked. And you know, if you do it right, it doesn't, it's just as good as fresh, I think, in my opinion.
We worked really hard.
We worked really hard in a secret soundproof booth. Heather and I recorded... Six, not one, not two, but six shows ahead of time.
Thanks to the fans and folks who called in.
We did them off hours, and we have a very active community around the show, so they were very helpful. And Yeah, I thought they were good. I thought, you know, I doubt anybody even noticed I was gone. I just went from being very pale to very tan overnight. All right, I see we have a board full of calls. You know, I have to say, I played one trick on you because I left town, I think, didn't I, before? No, I guess I was here for the Apple announcement. So I was able to do a couple of shows that I knew what Apple was going to do. But I also did a few shows that I didn't, and I acted like I did.
Yeah.
And thank goodness Apple did exactly what everybody said they would do. Had they not, we would have had to, I don't know what, we would have had to yank those shows.
I'd be getting a lot of angry calls right now, or neener, neener, neener calls.
The new iPhone with the 8-inch screen. This is so exciting. No, I said all the things. I said the fingerprint reader, the color, everything, because the rumor mill really knew.
You were on point.
I don't take credit. The rumor mill was on point. They got it right. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Our first call of the day. Who should we?
We got to talk to Patrick because it's actually about your vacation.
Oh, in San Berdoo?
Uh-huh.
Hello, Patrick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
I'm really interested to see how you talk to people in other countries when you didn't know their language.
Well, I can fake Italian pretty well. And you know what? The sad fact is that almost everywhere English is spoken. In most of the countries we were in, I don't speak any Greek, but most of the countries we were in, people spoke at least enough English to get by. But I also used the Google Translator, and that worked quite well on, you know, on occasions where we had to communicate and somebody didn't speak any English. I think it's on iOS as well, device called Google Translator. But in the case of Android, it'll actually speak to you. Does Siri do that? I don't know. But I could tell, I could say to my, I brought the Moto X, was the phone I brought with me. And I would say to my Moto X, okay, Google now, how do I say which way to the Rialto Bridge in Italian? And it would say it. Actually, is it going to say that now? Because I think it woke up. Yeah. But...
Che modo per il ponte di Rialto?
That's not a great translation, but it was enough for people to get it. So that was very handy. Yeah.
So did people think you were crazy when you left your phone?
No, they were intrigued. They were intrigued by the fact that I would pull it out, and that would happen. But you're right; it's a little bit odd. I think people will get more and more used to it. The problem, of course, is when they speak back. And I say, ah. So that's the real problem, is it translates for you, but it doesn't help the other direction. We're going to get there. I feel like computer translation is getting better, and it's admittedly not perfect, but it's getting better. And I think good enough is soon that we can maybe have this thing, this universal translator that science fiction authors have dreamed of for years. You put something in your ear and you can speak languages. But the other thing is, and this is thanks probably to the internet, people really do speak English now, and much more than they used to.
That's really cool. So, yeah, I was just wondering on the social aspect how they would react to you. So, but I guess most people are speaking English around the world.
Yeah, well, in several of the countries, it was a requirement. Many of the Greeks spoke perfect English because they had taken it since the equivalent of seventh grade. They'd taken it 5 or 6 years of it because it was required. So it's very interesting. In Turkey, same thing. It's an educational requirement. We should be doing that here, of course. The problem is it's pretty easy to know which language to pick if you're not in the U.S. Pick English. I don't know what you'd pick if you are in the U.S. What language should everybody learn? There is no one language. English is rapidly becoming the language of the world, and I think that that's thanks to the internet. Now, much of the internet is not in English. I don't mean to imply that, but it really, a lot of it is. And knowing English is of great economic value in a lot of these countries.
Hey, you know, well, I'm in a university classroom, and we have quite the diverse classrooms at Cal State San Bernardino. And when I look at their computer screens, they're usually in a different language.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Well, if you speak and of course, Google's smart. You know, when you get on Google in Turkey, it goes to google.tr. It doesn't, you know. All of a sudden, everything's in Turkish, which isn't so bad. It's worse when it's in Greek. It's not even a Roman alphabet. I don't know what I'm looking at. But I don't necessarily think that English should be universally spoken, but it is for we Americans. It's a great benefit. You know, that's one of the things I have mixed feelings about when you travel. It used to be when you travel, it was really very foreign. It was, you know, I remember when I was a kid going to Europe and you couldn't even find out what the baseball scores. It took you 3 days to get the Herald Tribune, you know. Now, we're all so interconnected. I think in the long run that's for the best, but you lose a little bit of the international diversity, you know, the idea that you're really somewhere different. There are still many places in the world, though, where, like Santorini, the Greek island of Santorini, where you can go where it's detached. There, it's an island, you know. But even there, all the shopkeepers speak perfect English.
Hey, well, Leo, I appreciate the perspective.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate your listening. And it's good to be back, I have to say. Really fun to travel. And people often ask me, should I bring a smartphone? If you're lucky enough to have AT&T, I say yes, because while it's not cheap, you can buy an international data plan. And it really is great to have a smartphone where you can not, you know, say, I'm not going to get lost because I know I can open Google Maps and find my way back to the hotel. Here's the really good news. I'm so excited about this. T-Mobile, starting in October, is going to have free international roaming. T-Mobile, which is owned by Deutsche Telekom, the German telecom company, is going to start offering at no extra charge international roaming in about 100 countries, they say. That's coming later this month. Boy, if you're a traveler and that is huge, because it cost me $250 for 800 megabytes. That's not a lot. $250 a month for 800 megabytes. To save that money and to be able to travel without worrying about that, man, it makes you think maybe I should get a phone that works on T-Mobile. It really does. And all the countries I was in, except for Croatia, supported this international roaming. Really interesting. I think this comes from some changes in the EU as well, which we'll talk about. 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, Google now. What does domo arigato mean?
Domo arigato. Domo arigato aka thank you very much is a 3D film which was produced in 1972 but not released until 1991. It was filmed using a process known as space vision, which required...
I think that's an over answer, but thank you.
Leo LaFleur. Yeah, right? More than I wanted.
I love computers. OMG, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson is here, our home theater guru. Hey, Scotty.
Hey, Leo, welcome back.
See you. So, yeah, you spent a little time in my house while I was gone, I hear.
I did. I snuck in and moved all the furniture around.
I was wondering. And no, actually, I invited Scott and my other good friend, who's also a home theater guru, Robert Herron, from Revision 3, to come in and calibrate the new high-end Samsung OLED TV.
Yeah.
And, well, first of all, what did you think? This is the first time you really had a chance to play with it, right?
It is. And it is a gorgeous picture.
Yeah.
There's just no question about
it.
And when you pick the picture mode, which is called movie, it actually, you know, measures pretty well. The colors measure really well.
So, in other words, it's accurate out of the box?
As long as you pick the
picture
movie
mode.
Yeah.
Now, one
exactly.
thing I noticed, and I wanted to ask you about this, and I think this wasn't you. I think this is a bug. It was back on warm 2 for the color space.
No, that's correct.
It is correct. Okay. So that's
warm
what you
two.
Want, not standard. Because it's a
correct.
Little yellower. Okay, good to know. Okay.
Well, we calibrated it. It should be calibrated, actually, now, so that the black and white, the grayscale, that is how it reproduces grays from black to white and everything in between, should be very close to what we call the system standard, that is a neutral black and white. But the Warm 2 color temperature is the one that's closest to that out of the box.
Interesting.
Which is the one, and it's also the one that is selected when you select movie mode.
It's the default, yeah.
It's the default for movie mode.
Okay.
Not for dynamic
mode. I was wondering why it kept going back to that. Now I understand why. Did you use hardware to do the calibration, or is it just your eyeballs? How do you do that?
Oh, no. We used two different sets of hardware, actually, because we wanted to compare them. Because OLED is a new technology, and we weren't entirely sure how our meters would read it. So Robert has one called the i1 Pro. I have one from Minolta called the CS200. And we used them both, and we found that they weren't very far off. So we were happy to see that.
That's a relief. They should be from identical, shouldn't they?
Well, there's always going to be a little bit of measurement, a slop factor, if you will, or a tolerance.
Okay.
So they're not going to be identical. The i1 Pro, Robert's i1 Pro, did read grays as being ever so slightly greenish, whereas mine read them as being, spot on once we did the calibration.
Okay.
Now, I will say that the brightness levels, the black to white gray scale, from about 50% brightness to 100% brightness, was enough off that we said, okay, we're gonna go in there and tweak that. And we did, and got it spot on. Really great.
So any negatives?
I have only one.
Okay.
The curved screen.
Yeah, I really don't. Funny because there's no reason for it to be curved. That's just something to make it different, right?
That's all Samsung will tell me is, oh, we did it to differentiate this product from our plasmas and LCDs.
And because we can.
Also because we can.
It's not really a glass panel. It's a
flexible material.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So now, why do you not like the curved screen?
Well, one thing I will recommend to you is, when you move, and I understand you are moving to a different place sometime.
Yeah.
Put that TV on a lower piece of furniture. As it is now, when you sit on the couch, you have to look slightly up at the TV.
Yeah.
It's a little too high. And it's sitting on a base, right? It has an integrated base.
It does, yes.
And the TV is leaning backwards.
It is. Like, it's so weird.
Which is weird. And the reason is, they designed that base so there's no support in front of the screen.
Right.
All of the support is behind the screen.
Right.
And so in order to make sure that it doesn't...
It's a little bit like an easel.
Exactly, exactly. And to make sure that it doesn't tip over, they had to tilt it backwards slightly.
And this is one of the negatives of OLED screens is off-angle viewing is not as good.
No, I disagree.
Oh, that's not true.
No, it's true of LCD TVs.
People have
OLED,
said that the OLEDs don't have the same... That's not true. That's good to know.
No. the only problem is that when you're off-axis, when you're not looking directly at the center of the screen, when your eyes are not parallel with the center of the screen and your view axis is perpendicular with the screen... The geometry of the picture looks weird because of the fact that the screen is curved. And you've said before, and you're right, that it's not very curved. It's not. The curve is pretty gentle.
It looks like it's more curved because of the stand, which is more curved. But once you just look at the screen itself, it's a very minor curve.
Yes, as long as you're sitting in the middle, as long as you're sitting center.
Right.
If you go off axis, then the curve starts to look weird again. The geometry of your perspective... looks kind of strange. Also, because of the way you have it set up at the moment, you're looking up from your couch.
Well, I'll fix that. I'll get a higher couch.
Get a higher couch or a lower piece of furniture. Whatever.
The couch is kind of low.
yes.
So, and look, nobody's going to buy this. It's a $9,000 television. So there will be other models, and I believe it'll be relatively inexpensive in just a matter of years.
A couple of years, probably. We're going to see tons of them at CES, I'm sure.
So my real question is more about the technology than that particular Samsung model. And you think the OLED technology is good.
Fantastic. Really amazing. The blacks are so deep, so inky.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically have an infinite contrast ratio because you get contrast ratio, you divide the brightest light output that it can do and the lowest light output it can do. And if you divide by zero, you get infinity.
I love watching it. Now, I have to say, I also love watching my Panasonic Viera that you calibrated last year.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous TV, and while there are some differences, I think, given the difference in price, the Viera is still a good recommendation.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's the bad news. Panasonic's getting out of the plasma business next
year. Can you believe it?
I'm so sad. Those were the best plasmas, right? And yep. in fact, because they're plasma, yep. the best TVs. Will OLED yep. supplant plasma now? I guess nobody
That's
wants
what
to
we
make
think.
Plasma. Yeah.
That's what we think. Yeah, absolutely. My my colleague Mark Henninger, who wrote the piece on AVS about the Panasonic exiting the plasma business, called it the curse of the Kuro. Yeah. That once you make a plasma that's so perfect, you stop making them and you get out of the business like Pioneer did. I'm not sure that's exactly true, but I think it's more to the point that Panasonic is losing money hand over fist.
Oh, billions.
Billions.
Sharp lost $4.6 billion or something. It was you can't keep doing that for very long and have a company. So I understand.
No. I do too. And TVs are sold on razor thin margins.
Right.
You know, so
I think only 5% of TVs now are sold are plasma. People want LCD.
Something like that. Yeah.
Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com. He's our Home Theater Geek. I'll tell you about his Home Theater Geek podcast right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, now I have a confession.
Yes.
You're going to be mad at me.
Please tell me, my son.
You're going to be mad at me.
Okay,
so
go ahead.
Because the thing was zoomed in, we found out later that the reason it was overscanned was, for some reason, the receiver, the Onkyo receiver, had just kind of independently decided to overscan it. So I
to zoom in.
By
a lot, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was letters were cut off. Everything was cut off. So once I found that, it was okay. But in the meantime, in a panic, I reset the picture.
Oh! Well, I have the picture settings. I will send them to you.
Can I get it back to the way it was?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Would you please?
No problem. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because I thought, well, I can't figure this out. I tried the picture size and all of that stuff, and I couldn't figure
it
out.
And it didn't work because it was coming from the Onkyo.
It was the Onkyo.
You know, I thought of that after I got your email, and I sent back my reply. I was thinking about it. I was going, I wonder if the receiver somehow got
yeah,
into
no,
it.
I just
didn't even know the receiver had a zoom mode.
I didn't either. In fact, I'm glad I found that because I went through the receiver settings, and it wasn't in pass-through. So I made sure that on every, and you have to go, by the way, you have to go input through
input by input.
So I went through all the inputs and said pass through, pass through, pass through, pass through.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what you need to do. That's
yeah, I don't want the receiver doing anything. I got a $9,000 TV at the other end.
That's right, that's right, that's right. And it had been beautifully calibrated.
I'm so sorry.
The colors, it's all right. It's easy to send you the settings.
And you didn't have to do that much, did you?
We didn't, no. In particular, the colors. Now there's a control in the Samsung called Color Space, and you can set it to auto or natural or native I think it's called. And when you set it to auto, the colors that came from the Blu-ray player or the test signal generator were right on the money. Red was
I noticed
ever so
it was set on auto. I thought that's interesting. They actually are doing it right.
Yeah, they are. You put it in native mode. And the colors go way out beyond where they should.
That's because in other OLED, words, the OLED is capable of this massive gamut.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Interesting.
And as I wrote in the piece that I wrote about the experience, we also video recorded it, and it's one episode of the Home Theater Geeks podcast. But in the thing I wrote, I said, when UHD, Ultra HD, this 4x resolution thing comes out, TVs are already out, but there's still a lot of questions around it. When it settles down, the color gamut may very well be much larger than what we have now. And if that's the case, which I think it probably will be, OLED is going to be ready to go.
Yeah.
It's going to be ready to go. So
I have to say, as much as I love 4K, I feel like that picture is so close to perfect that
it's beautiful.
Very satisfied. I
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
I don't
so get it on an eye level. Does that mean the eye should be at the middle of the screen?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I have to keep explaining this to Lisa. She said, well, just put it over the fireplace. I said, no, you can't put it
Do it.
You can't. I don't want to look up. So eye level.
Well, plus the fact that it can't, as far as I know, it cannot be removed from that base.
No.
Therefore, it cannot be wall mounted.
Can't be hung. Yeah.
It simply can't.
So I'm getting a new sofa anyway, so I'll just pay attention to the sofa.
Make it a little higher.
That sofa, we call it the cuddle couch, is more designed for cuddling than it is for watching TV.
Well, and that's fine.
It's very cushy. It's very soft, and so you sink
down. And you sink down.
I think it's abnormally low, actually.
Yeah, that may very well be. So you're looking up at the TV, and the TV is aimed up over your head.
Right.
Because it's tilted back slightly.
That really baffles me.
Yeah, because they don't want it to fall over.
It's an easel.
It's so stupid.
Samsung,
it's a beautiful design.
It's pretty, but it's not functional.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd want it removed from this, be able to remove it from the stand.
I would too, and I bet you version 2 they will.
Yeah, probably so.
So hang on, I'm going to ask you who's on Home Theater Geeks.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Before we let Scott Wilkinson go, I just want to mention that if you want to watch the episode of Home Theater Geeks, his podcast, where he calibrates his OLED, and you get to see it kind of in more detail, and he and Robert get pretty geeky. I watched it. It was fun.
We get very geeky, but it was a lot of fun.
It's Home Theater Geeks episode 175. You can find that at twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. You do that show every Monday on our podcast network. Who's coming up this Monday?
Oh, this Monday is very special. It's part two of a two-parter with Anthony Grimani. He's a world-class acoustician, and he's taking us through the basics of what you need to know about small room acoustics to improve. He counts, and I do too, the room that you're in as one of the components in your audio-video system.
Sure.
And it needs to be optimized, just like the TV needs to be calibrated and the sound system needs to be calibrated. So last week he took us through the room itself and how to treat it with absorbers and diffusers and bass traps and different kinds of treatments in the room to improve the sound quality. This week he's going to be talking about where to place the seats and where to place the speakers for optimum performance. He's very good. And he brings along a PowerPoint, too, and we show that on the video so people who are watching can really see what he's talking about. It's really good. He's excellent.
Home Theater Geeks, that's what, Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time at twit.tv.
Yep.
And if you can't watch live there, we make on-demand of
it's
all
always,
our shows.
Always there waiting for you.
Hey, thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. That's my phone number. We're going on to Karen in Torrance, California. Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, good. It's fun to hear you talk about your trip to Italy. My husband and I went last year, so you're bringing up really good memories.
Isn't it a wonderful place to go?
Oh, it's amazing. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you took one of our favorite things was to do the Segway tour of Florence.
Oh, that sounds great. No, I didn't do that. We were just in Venice for a few days, and then we went off on a cruise. So, what was great is we got such a fun time. We're going back next year. So, Segway tour of Venice. I'm making a note of that. That sounds
great. Florence.
Of Florence, I mean. Yes.
Yeah. It was great because I'm like, you know, one hand has my iPhone taking pictures and the other hand's kind of driving the thing around. So it was great.
There are streets in Venice you couldn't even get a Segway down. It's so it's so narrow there. Yeah, Florence is a beautiful city. It's the fun thing about Italy is it's really not one country. Every region is different.
Oh, yeah. And it's absolutely beautiful.
It makes it fun, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I do for you?
Well, we're a business that's growing, and our phones are, like, on their last legs. You know, they're about ready to die, and I'm hoping my battery doesn't, you know, give up the ghost even on this call. And so, you know, I'm really interested in getting a phone system that works with a virtual team. And you know, we had a really bad experience with Vonage 7 years ago, but that was...
Oh, yeah, Vonage wasn't really designed for business, you know. Okay, first of all, disclaimer. These guys are advertisers, but it's also what we use in my small business.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 25, 30 employees. We had the same thing, which is employees wanted to use cell phones. They wanted to be able to make business calls wherever they were.
Yeah,
I didn't want to really contract with the local phone company. Everybody's had bad experiences with, you know, AT&T or whoever your phone company is. So we have a consulting engineer who does all of our IT, and he said, I've installed a company called Ring Central for other customers, and I think you should do it. And so we looked at it. We installed it. There are different plans, but the base plan is $20 per month per user. You can now it is VoIP, but you don't know it's VoIP. It uses not regular phones, although they're Polycom or other phones that look just like regular phones. But you plug them into the wall and down, and somehow magically, it's actually using the internet. But it's not Vonage. You would never know.
Yeah.
You would never know. But again, full disclaimer, after we installed it in our offices, they said, hey, you like it, right? Would you like to do ads for it? And I said, yeah. So they are an advertiser. And sometimes I know people say, well, that means you're not going to tell the truth about it. There are other companies for a long time. So I would, without hesitation, recommend them. In fact, that's what we're using. We've been using for 2 years. I, for a while, used a company called Grasshopper.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little simpler. It's not quite so elaborate, but these are all the same idea, which is they're using, instead of having a hardware solution in the basement, a PBX, which is basically a big computer, it's all done kind of in the cloud, and that means it's so much more flexible. And it means you can have offs, somebody can call a number, call your main number, our 800 number, and then say, I want extension 4, and that could be some guy in Tucson. It doesn't matter, because it's all digital, it's all magical. You get voicemail in your inbox on all of these systems. You have voice trees. It's very flexible. Grasshopper was a good solution for me when I was just a couple of people because it makes it feel like, you actually have a big office.
Right.
But it's for cell phones. It's like it's a service that you use your own cell phones for.
And so if they dial out with their cell phone number, does it show your company number then?
Yeah, it does for both. RingCentral does that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And RingCentral RingCentral is more of a big boy system. It has things like it'll tie into your CRM, your Salesforce.com. It has conferencing built in.
Mm-hmm.
It has it's weird. You can have business text messaging that comes from your 800 number. Incoming text messages get automatically routed to phones, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Does it also interface, do you know, with Infusionsoft?
I do not know.
Okay, but I'm sure I can look at it.
That's what you use?
Yeah, that's what we're going to be upgrading to. So, I didn't even think about the CRM interface.
It's really nice, at least for the Salesforce, because you're in a call and it interfaces and you can take notes and all of this stuff is all there.
Mm-hmm.
So for salespeople who do sales or any kind of customer relation management, that's what CRM stands for. It's very good. The idea is let's do it in the cloud, right? Why should we be doing hardware? Let's do it in the cloud. And by doing that, the flexibility just...
Mm-hmm.
is astronomically better.
Well, and then you're also getting to see the incoming calls and the messages are coming in, monitoring maybe team communications.
Absolutely. The control you have is better. So those are the only two I have experience with. There are many solutions. Mark T in our chat room says, and all of the tier two carriers, tier one carriers rather, will offer you what's called cloud PBX. XO does it. Level 3 does it. So there, this is a well-known kind of well-done technology. So there are lots of choices. That's good news because you can probably go out, if you're big enough and get bids, you can say, hey, well, what can you do for me?
Right. Have you ever heard of 8x8 at all? Because that was a name that came up recently.
I've used 8x8, but I've used them as a VoIP solution. I don't know what their business solutions look like.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
They've been around quite a while. They're probably a very good company.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
You're
part of my Saturday morning chores routine. I get entertainment and education while I'm getting things done around the house. So
thank
I really
you.
Appreciate your company all these years.
I love that. I'll imagine you cleaning the house as I'm talking.
Exactly. We're all about efficiency. So
get two things done at once. I agree with you, Karen.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Leo.
Yeah. Good luck with the business. And it's really good to have these options now. And it would be foolish, I think, to just go with the default and say, we'll just use a phone company. I'm really glad we went with a virtual solution. And it's worked fine for us. And, I don't even tell the employees it's voice over the internet, that they're using the internet. They don't know. They can't tell. It doesn't have any of the flaws of your traditional, VoIP services, the blah, 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 stuttering digital stuff, the weird latency, none of that. It sounds as good as, or in most cases, better than landline phone service. I see you're talking with various people in the chat room about the stand issue.
Yes. Dr. Mom of the Bride.
she points out that there's sensors, and that's where the ambient light sensor is and so forth. See?
Right, and the IR sensor for the remote and stuff like that. That's in the frame.
Yeah, the camera for the Skype is in the frame too, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, but I still don't know why they couldn't make the stand removable. Well, the base, I mean.
Oh, I see. You don't mind the frame.
No.
I get it. It's the thing behind it.
Well, that it's sitting on. Basically, it needs to have some sort of base that you put on a credenza or whatever. And it's not removable from that base, so it can't be wall-mounted.
Right. Right. I do like what they did with the removable, that unit, that all the hard work and stuff is completely independent.
Called the breakout box.
Yeah.
Which I know you know that term. Yeah, exactly right.
That's a very, because that's upgradable.
It's, yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's exactly. And it needs an upgrade because the software's crap. The more I use it, the more upset I am with it. It just
really with the user interface, you mean?
Yeah, but you know what? You probably will never. This is the smart TV stuff. You're not going to use that.
Oh yeah, we didn't even look at that. We didn't have time. We ran out of battery and media.
Well, I'm thrilled that you did it, and do please send me the settings so I can go back and.
Oh yes, I will do that right away. Yeah,
it didn't seem like there was a whole lot. You changed the cell brightness level to 5, I think. It was a few things, right?
Well, yeah. Now here's one thing I wanted to mention to you. There's a parameter called cell light.
Right.
Right? Which is kind of like an LCD TV's backlight control. Ah. And all that does is it just changes the overall output of light coming from all the cells. Now, when we got there, this was the other thing that was out of spec, if you will. The peak brightness coming off that TV was 60 foot Lamberts. Typically, in a room like that, you would want 30 to 40. So 60 is way too bright. So we turned down that cell light control until we got to, I think, 34 foot Lamberts.
Okay.
Now, and that was in a dark room. Now, if you want to watch football during the day.
Well, it has an ambient light sensor.
I think we disabled that.
Uh-huh. So I wonder.
I don't like that myself. I would rather do it manually. So if you're watching during the day, a football game or whatever, just go into the menu and turn up the cell light control.
That's probably
It won't change the calibration. It won't change anything else. The ambient light sensor, I'm not sure all of what it does. It might affect the contrast control, some other controls that I wouldn't want to touch.
Right.
Which is why I would recommend going in manually and just increasing the cell light control when the time comes, when it's during the day, and then turn it back down when you're at night.
Right.
That's going to give you the best possible picture quality. But, oh, my God, the picture quality is, holy smokes.
Isn't
really
it beautiful? Isn't it gorgeous?
Oh, we watched some Life of Pi. It was like, so nice.
Yeah. It is really good. Although, again, I have to say the Viera is so gorgeous, too. That it's not like I feel like, oh, crap, I have to watch the TV.
Watch the damn Panasonic.
No, I mean, it really is. In fact, we watched last night. We had the choice. We watched Breaking Bad on the Panasonic last night just because that was a more convenient place to sit. So,
well, it's also a bigger picture. That's a 65-inch
it
TV.
It is a bigger picture, yeah.
And it's flat.
Yeah. The curve doesn't bother me, but it's usually just me sitting or me and somebody close.
That's fine.
Next to me.
That's one of the things I object to about the curve is that it encourages a solitary viewing experience.
Yeah, it does.
You know?
Did you try the 3D at all? Did you play with that at all?
No, we didn't. One of the reasons was there were at least a couple of the glasses that happened to be around didn't even have their little, that little sticky thing that's on the film that first comes on when you first take the glasses out of the case. We didn't want to be the ones to remove
it. Oh, I thought I had removed them.
No.
They're still on there?
Yeah.
Oh, you could have removed them. That's so funny. I watched a 3D movie with them on, apparently.
Well, maybe one of the glasses it might be on.
Oh, know what? That's probably what it was. I removed it on the one I used. That's probably what it was. Yeah, because it has a big red tab on it. I wouldn't.
Yeah, you wouldn't miss that.
You couldn't miss it, yeah. It's very good because it's so bright. You know, it really does a good
3D,
job.
Oh, in 3D, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And in 3D mode, I'm sure it kicks that cell light control back up.
It does. I noticed it did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's totally fine.
All right, I'll let you, you got about 3 minutes. Enjoy.
Oh, great.
And I'll
appreciate
give you a
that.
Break
Thank
while
you.
I eat soup.
Please, eat some soup. Somebody here asked me, oh, Tech Dino asked me if I'd seen Gravity yet in IMAX. And the answer is yes, I have. In fact, I saw it twice. I saw it in IMAX 3D, and I saw it at an AMX ETX theater, which uses real D 3D, and in this particular case, Dolby Atmos sound. Phenomenal. The sound, the Dolby Atmos soundtrack for Gravity is so wonderful. I recommend, there's only 400, I think, theaters in the country that have a Dolby Atmos sound system. But if you have one near you, go see Gravity in that sound format, because they panned things all around the room so beautifully that it really makes you feel like you're in outer space with the astronauts. Now, they also, in the filmmaking process, they did some amazing things. The opening shot is a single shot that lasts 17 minutes. And that by itself, and there are a lot of other really long shots in the movie, and that in itself really adds to the sense that you're floating in space. Because if you have a lot of cuts, what are called cutaways, in a movie, it's a little jarring sometimes. And here in this movie, there's, I think, a total of 200, which is way less than most movies. So feature-length movies. So, and this isn't even all that long. It's 90 minutes. I really liked the movie. There are those who kind of didn't. I thought it was fantastic, a really gripping tale. And the Dolby Atmos sound, oh, man. If you can see it that way, that is the way to see it. No question about it. Aaron B. says, every base is removable if you have the proper hammer. Well, yes, it's true. That is true. Oh, hey, Keeksta saw Gravity and Atmos. It was incredible. Yes, wasn't it, though? Man, oh, man. Jay, he hated when they cut up the Grauman's Chinese into little screens. Yes, that's true, but the main theater is still there. And in fact, they have redone it into an IMAX theater. In fact, it's the largest IMAX theater in the world in terms of seating capacity. It's got like 900 and some seats in it. Third largest screen in North America, IMAX screen. And they had to, in fact, excavate. They had to dig down below the floor level of the Grauman's Chinese, now called the TCL Chinese Theater, because the Chinese huge electronics company TCL bought a controlling interest, or at least naming rights. But yeah, they had to actually dig down to make this the seating more stadium-like and to accommodate that huge screen.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, that's the time to do it. 8888 Ask Leo. Call me right now. Our website is techguylabs.com, and you can go there and find answers to all the questions, video and audio from the shows, from all of our shows, and you even can find a link to our wonderful chat room full of above average people, mostly better looking than normal, in there answering questions and chipping in. What is that big green thing, Heather Hammond? What is that?
I love the color.
What
it's
is
a yogi
that?
Bow, which I'm still discovering what it is, but someone contacted us and wanted to send it in care of me.
Because I sit, and you sit now too, I notice, on a yoga ball instead of a chair.
Yes, I love
that. And the
this.
Reason I do that, people think, oh, I do that for fitness or health or core strength. It's because we do a lot of video here. In fact, we even make video of this radio show. And the last thing you want to see on video is somebody slumped in an office chair. It's just so I sit on a ball because it keeps me upright and kind of lively. It's almost like you're standing up. There's a lot of radio hosts who stand what they call stand-up radio because it's more you're more energetic and you're more lively.
It does open up your diaphragm, right?
Yeah, it opens up my diaphragm. But also, yes, exactly. It's so it's more. It's I think it's better for anybody who's got to kind of be more energetic. But you're sitting on it because you like it, huh?
Yeah, I started doing it at this other job, and I'm really just love
yeah.
it.
I think you it's good for your posture. And
yeah, you don't slump as much.
I don't sit in an office chair. I like this. So the Yogi Bow. So I guess the folks at Yogi Bow noted that I don't that I have an. They said I have what an odd. I like odd chairs.
Non-conventional
it's
chairs.
Not really. Well, what is it?
It's not
and you can
ball.
Fold it into a bed, too. It looks amazing for, like, watching OLED.
I had no idea. Scott Wilkinson told me that I have the wrong sofa for the TV, or the wrong stand for the TV.
Oh, I love it. So now you got to buy something
I got to get
else.
A new sofa for my $9,000 TV, because mine is too low. Come on. Anyway.
Why,
you think you buy a $9,000 TV, it would aim at your eyes. Automatically. All right, so we're going to get back to the technology talk. But if you get the Yogi Bow out of its bag, I'd like to try it. Could I do the show on it?
Yeah.
Or would I think
so.
Would I be disappear from sight?
You can mold and bend it to be high enough. It appears. So.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. As they prepare the Yogi Bow for its national radio appearance. Let's go to Arguin in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hi, Arguin. Oh, how you doing? Hello?
Hello, Arguin. Wait a minute. Hello?
Did I press the right button? I did. Can you hear me, Arguin? What concerns me is I don't even hear any hiss or buzz or anything. Well, I'll tell you what. I think I know how to put this on hold now. So let me go to Joe in L.A., see if that's working. Hi, Joe.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good, it is working. I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you. I appreciate your show so much, and I thought maybe you could help me with a... I got this related searches. I don't know if it's a pop-up. It's popping in from the left. I don't know where it came from, and I've tried to get rid of it, and I wondered if you would...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know exactly where it's from, but I know the general idea. So yeah. It's a form of advertising, if you think about it.
I think so, yeah.
And usually that comes from a toolbar. It's unfortunate, but nowadays when you install what used to be called shareware, you know, free or pay-as-you-will software, when you install it nowadays, it often comes with a payload. The installer includes other stuff. And if you're not scrupulously careful...
Right.
About unchecking the box when that stuff shows up, it will install itself. And while it's not technically malware because you gave it permission, it, as far as I'm concerned, it's malware. It's sneakyware at the very least, right?
Yeah, it seems like it.
The trick is to figure out if it's malware. By which we mean kind of illegal, bad stuff, it won't give you an uninstall option. It's just going to be on there and you can't get rid of it. It's more likely that it was something you installed, you know, even like Java does, even Oracle. Oracle's got more money than God. And nevertheless, they've decided they want to make more money. And so when you install Java, which is often required by a lot of programs and tools, it has this payload. I think it's the ask toolbar. It's very annoying. So what I would do is let's hope it's not malware, but in fact, it's quasi legitimate, which means it'll have an uninstall entry in your add remove programs or your programs and features control panel. So I would scan through there and look for if something that says maybe toolbar or just look for some name that. You know, seems a little unusual. And I bet you that will be there and you can just uninstall it.
Is there any kind of program, if that doesn't work, that I can get to download that might knock it out? Or is that...
Well, this is the problem. Antivirus solutions won't because it's not technically a virus. You said, well, I'm assuming you said yes. If you didn't, then antivirus should find it and get rid of it. But the way it's presenting sounds like it's... You know, kind of quasi legitimate. So there are some free programs out there. KC8RLU in our chat room says C Cleaner will do this. So that's probably something to look at. C Cleaner is certainly a quality product.
How do you spell that?
It's the word C and Cleaner. It's from a company called Piriform. So go to PIRIFORM.com. You can try it for free. I do think that they have a free and a paid version of it. But take a look at that. I'm not normally a fan of CCleaner, but this is actually a good use for it. But seriously, the first thing I do is go into your programs and features menu or if you have an older version of Windows, your add remove programs menu, and see if you can figure out. You'll know. It'll say something like toolbar or, you know, search bar or something like that. And if it has an uninstaller, just do – that's the best way to do it. It would be my guess that that's what happened. If you install shareware – and you get this, by the way, we from every shareware site, download.com, from you know, any shareware site, they will often – the installer itself will often add it. And there will be checkboxes, you know, when you install – but most of us just go, yeah, 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 okay, I want the program. Yeah, 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 click, 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 and miss that. Uncle Bick in our chat room says there's a uninstaller called Revo, R-E-V-O, uninstaller.com. There's a free version of that. That will give you at least a list of all the stuff recently installed in reverse order so you can see what was most recently installed. And that's another way to do it. Now, if it turns out that this isn't something that came along with a legitimate program, it's not a quasi-legitimate payload, but actual malware, that's another matter. It won't have an uninstall entry in the add remove programs. It won't be easy to get rid of, and it may have installed stuff you don't see. And that's a whole different matter. And you know what my philosophy on that is. Yes, there are programs like Malwarebytes that will claim that they can remove that stuff. The problem is there's no guarantee, and as any security guru will tell you, once your machine has been compromised, there's no way of knowing if it's clean. You can't prove that it's clean because stuff hides. So once a machine has been compromised, it is the only way to say with certainty, I know this machine is secure, is to, I hate to tell you this, format the drive, reinstall Windows from scratch, from a known good copy. But I don't think you'll need to do that. If it makes sense to you, if you've recently installed shareware or something like that, you probably got that as part of the payload. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Big change in the way Facebook works. They changed a privacy setting that means you can no longer hide from Facebook search. People can, you know, they've always been able to search for you. I think this is the reason Facebook changed it. By the way, every time I read a tech story in mainstream media, I have to dig a little deeper, and I would encourage you to do so, because unfortunately, mainstream media doesn't often understand the deep details of this stuff and blows things out of proportion. Or, maybe more likely, they do understand it, but they realize they're going to get a lot more clicks on their webpage and a lot more subscriptions and so forth if they act hysterical. So there was a little bit of, I think, overreaction to this Facebook decision. Look, if you're on Facebook, you're searchable. It's not possible to create a non-searchable profile. It never has been on Facebook. What you could have done and used to be able to do is have a setting in your Facebook timeline that says people can't look for you by name. But because of the graph search on Facebook, it's so easy to find people without using their names. I don't know if that really hit anything. So you can search for high school classmates who now live in Duluth and find somebody, even if they have it set that you can't search for them by name. So it's not very difficult. If you know a little bit about the person you're looking for, it's actually very easy to find. It always has been very easy to find them on Facebook. Well, ever since they added the social graph search. So in a way, Facebook's just saying, look, if you're on Facebook, face it. People can find you. And it would be a misrepresentation for us to have a checkbox that says, don't search for me. So I think in a way, Facebook's being more honest. They're saying, yeah, you know what? You can't. There is no setting to be not searchable on Facebook. The reason I bring it up is this is something you should consider. If you do not want to be found by ex-girlfriends or boyfriends, if you do not want your high school classmates to track you down, don't be on Facebook. There's no way around it. They can and they will. Now, you can, and this is probably a good idea, if you really want to use Facebook. See, this is a problem I've faced with my mom. My mom doesn't want to be on Facebook. She doesn't want anybody from her past to find her. She said, I want to connect with them. And that's fine. I understand that. But I keep saying, but mom, if you want to see what I'm up to or what the kids are up to, Facebook's great because everybody, we're all posting pictures up there. And what you want is kind of a read-only Facebook. I wish Facebook would offer this as a feature where you could look at stuff, but not, you know, you could be somebody's friend without it in any way exposing yourself. They don't. So I've looked into this, and yeah, you can turn off as much as you can in terms of search, but if she's using her real name, you can no longer turn off the name search. What I would suggest, if, unless you have an extremely uncommon name, the chances are that there are more than one person on Facebook with your name. So what I would suggest, not using a real picture or, you know, and not using any real personal information. Don't put the actual location of where you live, where you work. Don't put any information in there. Uncheck as much as you can. People will be able to search for your name, but when they get to that profile, it won't be very communicative. It certainly won't give them the kind of information they need to know if it's you. But be aware, when you're on Facebook, you are now visible. There's no way to kind of be invisible. Brian in the chat room says, I agree with Leo's mom. People are in my past for a reason. Yeah, I understand that. I really do. And yet, you know, when I was traveling around, I told my mom, I said, you should really look at my Facebook page. Now, my page is totally public. So she doesn't have to even be a Facebook user to look at my page. You just go to facebook.com/LeoGLaporte and everything's there. Because I made the choice to be public on Facebook. And I think that that's mostly because there's no, it's deceptive to think that you're not. So, and I don't mind if any old girlfriends want to look me up, that's fine. Kathy, especially you, I miss you. And no, I'm just kidding. I actually hooked up with my very first high school girlfriend some years ago using Facebook. Not hooked up in the way the kids talk, but she lives in San Diego, and it was great. I said, Kat, you know, and she came up here for a business trip, and I said hi, and we had dinner. It was really nice.
Oh,
it was
that's
fun.
Adorbs. I just did the same thing a month ago.
See, that's one of the nice things. I think that's a nice thing about Facebook. But, of course, if you're Walter White and you're trying to hide from the feds, it's probably not great to put your picture and profile up on Facebook.
Yeah.
Anyway, you should be aware of that. You will get a notification the next time you go to Facebook that says, hey, if you've got that setting, don't search for me. That says, hey, we're taking that away, just so you know. And that might be the time to delete your Facebook account if you really want to be anonymous. You know, did you watch Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
You watch it? So the second to last episode, I know this is not a spoiler, Walter White decides to go underground to hide from the feds. And in order to do this, he has to move to a cabin in the ruralest part of New Hampshire. And he says, well, do I have internet? No, of course not, says the guy. Do I have a phone? No, of course not, says the guy. Do I have electricity? He says, if I sign you up for any utility, you're now public. No. And that's the problem. To be completely off the grid means literally you got to be off the grid. Or make up a new name and new persona, and that's what you use on Facebook. That's legit. I always told my kids that. I said, it's not okay to lie unless you're lying in an online profile. That's fine. You do not have to, and especially when they're, you know, young. I said, please don't use your real name. Please. Is Arguin back? Can I talk to her?
Yeah, it's a guy. And I think he's there.
Let's try it. Arguin, Vancouver, British Columbia.
I am here. Yay. Can you hear me now?
Sorry about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
I've been meaning to call you for a while, but now that you have visited the old country, I'm from Turkey, actually.
Oh, man, do I love Turkey.
Welcome back.
Wow. Istanbul was amazing.
It is, isn't it?
Wow. It's, yes, it's east meets west. I mean, it's an amazing amalgam. The history there is phenomenal. The people are so warm and welcoming. The food is great. I mean, they call it sometimes the Paris of the East, and I think that's probably an apt description. Anyway, thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Leo, the reason I'm calling today is actually it's more of a rhetorical device than a question. It's about archiving, long-term archiving my files and photos and all that stuff. I mean, we have been discussing backups, and they have all these solutions we have to us. But what we don't have is that what happens in 10 years, or say even 5 years, where the medium we have them on is no longer available. I mean, I'm looking at a jazz drive.
Like, perfect example. Or a zip disc.
Yeah, zip. I have that tape.
Nothing wrong with them. They're still legible, but who has a zip drive or a jazz drive anymore?
Yeah, and my worry is that if something happens, let's say, you know, I get hit by a bus and I go into a coma and I come back 5 years later and I had no data.
What am I going to do with this hard drive? Nothing could plug in. Well, it's a fascinating question. We have to take a break. I love your rhetorical question. And in fact, it's become a major area of study in library science. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte.
All right.
The tech guy. Our show today brought to you, it's kind of timely, isn't it, by Ring Central. You know, I'm always in a little bit of a quandary when somebody calls up and says, can you recommend, you know, something that's an advertiser? But the reason we have our wonderful advertisers is often because it's something we use, we love, and that's a perfect example with Ring Central. And we said, when they came to us and said, would you do an ad? I said, yeah. I don't like to, in fact, I won't endorse something I don't use. And Ring Central is one of those things that not only do I use, we all use in the office every single day. The best cloud-based phone system out there. Zero startup costs. And as the guy paying the startup costs, I appreciated that. It costs us $20 a month to use per user, and we get a lot for that $20. The ability to use your cell phone, absolutely. The RingCentral apps for the iPhone and the Android devices let me call for my business number, receive incoming business calls. Voicemail ends up in my inbox. So do faxes. This solves the whole fax conundrum. I don't have a fax machine. I don't need one. It is everything you need, and because it's in the cloud, it's so powerful, so flexible. Call parking, auto receptionist, dial by name directory, and on and on and on. Our producers love getting the voicemail through their email. We can get all our fax messages on our smartphone. The auto receptionist greets callers, announces employees and department extensions. You get calls after hours, no problem. RingCentral routes those calls to your smartphone's phone service center or voicemail. You got clients on hold, type a message in real time, have it translated, get this, from text to speech, and deliver to your caller while they wait. Leo's on the air right now, but he'll be with you in a moment. Awesome! Ring Central, all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 per month per user. We've got a 30-day risk-free trial right now for you that gives you, and this is great, every time you buy a desk phone, a second phone, free up to 20 phones. Call, this is a special number just for you, my listeners. Don't look at this number in the upper left-hand corner. It's a special number. 800-543-9980. You got that? 800-543-9980. You can also go to ringcentral.com and use a promo code TWIT, ringcentral.com. I really have been very happy with this. Visit the website, read up on it, and then take advantage of this risk-free trial, 30-day risk-free trial, and free phone trial. 800-543-9980, ringcentral.com. Great question by Argwen. We're talking about the idea that how do you know or how do you keep your data for years? And, you know, because, Argwen, I was just in Turkey and Greece, I've been to Egypt. There is stuff from 5,000 years that we see, but it's almost always carved into stone or written on papyrus. That it is, digital media, it has a shelf life of probably 5 years. I think you picked a good number. And if you might still even have a zip drive. But how are you going to hook up that parallel port zip drive to a modern PC?
You know? Well, my solution has been close to actually carving in stone is that, what's very important for me is my source code. For my apps and stuff. So what I do is when I publish an app, I print it out. I take the file to Kinko's and print it out and put it in a bank box.
You know, it's funny. That's what I tell writers to do. If you're writing a novel, I have a good friend, very well-known novelist, lost a novel in a fire, the Berkeley Oakland Hills fire of about 20 years ago. Lost a novel. And because she had backups, but they burned along with the originals. And that is one solution, and I think a good solution. Print it, but of course don't store it on premises. Put it in a bank.
Put it in the bank. Well, you see, that used to work. My problem is now photographs have become
right.
part of my business as well.
Right.
And that's not a printing solution.
No. Well, I mean, it is, but,
it's
not practical.
Know,
and in fact, for source code, it's not practical because you'd have to type it all in again.
That's well, it's worse than trying to remember it all.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, here's a couple of things I would say. One of the cloud is your friend here because presumably a cloud provider, unless they go under, so you probably should have more than one, but presumably a cloud provider is going to maintain their hardware and continue to upgrade, and it's in their interest to keep your data available to you. Now, this is a new thing. I mean, we don't know what it'll be like in 50 years or even 100 years, but I think, for instance, Google's probably going to be around for another 20, 50 years. If you store it on Google Drive, the chances are excellent that you will be able to access it again. But I wouldn't stop there. I would probably put it on Google and Amazon, and maybe Google and Amazon and Rackspace. And then if one of them goes out of business, or even two, you've got a third you can go to. I think that's not a bad way to do it. I know people who, if it's too big to upload, and if it's video, for instance, is too big to upload, who put it on hard drives, wrap the hard drive in those anti-static Mylar bags, put that in bubble wrap, and store it in the dark in a closet, in a temperature-controlled closet. That's likely to work. The problem, of course, is only until SATA interfaces disappear.
That's right. And also only until the hard drive decides to seize up. And
But that's the point. If you put it in a situation where it's not being used and it's unlikely to go bad. But you're right. And so that's important. Any one place you store it is not enough. You've got to have, in fact, this is that 3-2-1 backup I talk about all the time. You've got to have at least two different forms of media. There isn't a perfect solution. And this is, I've talked to librarians. Interestingly enough, this is what library science is all about, particularly nowadays, is this issue of archiving data, archiving media. And digital's good for one reason. You can make infinite copies at almost light speed. But what if it's a JPEG, and how long will JPEGs be readable?
That's right. How long RAW files are going to be readable?
Right. Right.
You know.
So, I mean, it's a pretty good bet that a bitmap will always be readable because it's such a simple format. It's just dot, 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 dot. So, same thing with lossless audio and video. You know, there are certain formats you could put it in that are not highly processed, so they're likely to be read. But not all bets are off after about 50 years. Think 50 years ago, 1963. You know, 50 years from now, what are we going to be using? And would you be able to read a hard drive? I don't know.
You know, I hate to date myself, but I also have a 9-track tape.
Yeah. Right. I've got, you know.
I would like to get out of that.
Disc packs. Yeah. What are you going to do? So you can't. You're exactly right. And this is an issue that only the real problem is. It's doable in a human lifetime. As long as you're around to pay attention to it, every few years, consider it, put it a little tickler, say, oh, yeah, it's time to move it to the next thing. As long as you're around, it's not a problem. The real issue is not 50 years, it's 500 years. And for that, you have to carve it in stone or put it on papyrus. I don't think that's changed.
Actually, that's probably correct. It's probably going to be the... Well, it depends on, you know, when the language changes and then people no longer understand what...
Then you can't even read it.
You can't even read it.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see some of these old writings that you know, nobody could read for a long time. It was only recently this was fascinating to me, some of the early... What was it from Mycenae? I can't remember, but some of the early Greek writings were indecipherable until they applied computer analysis to it. They actually used cryptographic analysis and were able to go back and figure out what it was only recently. So, yeah, I mean, I think we might have to give up the notion that anything could be saved beyond our lifetime, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, at least, you know, if we can save, if we can solve the 5-year problem or a 10-year problem.
Solve that as long as you're around to continue to solve it, or somebody cares enough about it to continue to solve it, it'll continue. Somebody also said, and I think this is really true, history began in the 60s with digital technology, because all of a sudden everything is being recorded in audio, video. And there's so, you know, if wouldn't it be wonderful if we could go back to Abraham Lincoln's time, or even more interesting, this time of Julius Caesar, and watch videos of them and see how they lived and what do they sound. It would be a very different experience. History would be a very different discipline. Well, I think future historians, if we solve this data problem, might well have that opportunity. Yeah.
In the meantime, all we can hope is that, you know, if we happen to disappear for a few years, that our backup providers won't cancel our account and delete all the files.
Well, and this is also true, Arguin. You care a lot more about your source code than your grandkids will.
That's right.
I think really there's a point beyond which we care a lot more than our kids will. I don't know if all those pictures, all those videos, all that stuff in the shoebox really matters to them. It'd just be more stuff to get out of Grandpa's closet.
They will start caring about our pictures when they have grandkids.
Maybe. You're right. Wouldn't you love to be able to show pictures of your great-grandparents to your kids? I mean, I could think of the value of this. But Facebook's not going to be here in 50 years, I don't think.
No.
Something like it will be. So the trick is, the solution is to stick around long enough to keep this stuff moving downstream. Once it's digital, it's easier to do that. I mean, if you had a shoebox full of photos, admittedly, that shoebox full of photos will always be able to be read if you archive them well enough. That's why paper is the way to do it. If you print a photo using art, by the way, this is not normally the case, archival inks and archival paper. Most of the inks and paper we use will fade or break up or become brittle or brown before we're gone, let alone 500 years from now. But if you use archival inks, and it's possible, and archival acid-free paper, that, and you store it in the dark in a temperature-controlled situation, those pictures will last virtually forever. Pictures don't need to be translated. So maybe that's the solution. 8888 Ask Leo. Great question, Arguin. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after. Oh, Johnny Jett will be next hour, by the way, right after this. Nathan Staton, our fabulous musical director, once again showing that music will last forever. Because this song is like 30 years old. 8888 Ask Leo. When we were in Venice, we went to a Vivaldi concert, because Vivaldi was a Venetian composer. And I thought, well, it'd be fun to see the Four Seasons in Venice. And it was wonderful. But there's a good example. Now, what doesn't last is the performance, of course. We don't know what it sounded like in Vivaldi's time. In fact, they may have sounded very different, because the instruments were different and the performance might have been very different. But music survives, doesn't it? Probably because people like music. They love music and they get attached to it. There you go. No, Vivaldi's no longer touring. I think he's retired. 8888 Ask Leo. Frank. Frank is next, also from Vancouver, but this time Vancouver, Washington State. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Hey, my wife's really, she has a friend at work and really loves the Nexus 7, but she has the one with the Wi-Fi, and my wife's waiting to get the one with LTE, and we're Verizon customers.
No. Oh, don't get me started.
What should we do?
So, this is so infuriating. Verizon is required by law to offer an open network.
Yeah.
And they are required by law, by the FCC, to make the Nexus 7 work with Verizon on its LTE network. And there's no reason not to, except that Verizon wants to sell you the junky tablets, the more expensive junky tablets in their stores, than let you use the Google one. The Google one's great. I love the Nexus 7.
I saw your review on Before You Buy, and we loved it. So
my friend Jeff Jarvis has been livid about this. In fact, filed a complaint with the FCC, saying Verizon's not living up to its court-ordered, court-mandated open network requirements. Verizon's answer is, we're going to offer it. We just have to, you know, test it.
Yeah, that's what I was reading. A lot of testing.
There's no reason for this.
So what? Just go to T-Mobile or AT&T or what? What would you say? Or just wait?
Well, here's the issue. You know, LTE is great, but if you got to use the one that's best in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And if you don't have T-Mobile LTE, and very few people do, there's no point in getting an LTE tablet for T-Mobile.
Yeah.
I bet you Verizon's the best where you are, right?
Oh yeah, Verizon by far. Yeah.
Although I got to tell you, you know, Sasha Segan over at PC Magazine does this test every year, and Sasha does a great job with it, where he tests the native 3 and 4G speeds of all the mobile carriers, and consistently AT&T wins. The problem is it's so specific to where you are. So
right. I don't know what AT&T is like here. We've just been Verizon customers for years. Our phones, we love that. But
well, I would check, and if AT&T has LTE where you are and probably is a little bit faster than Verizon's, then that might be the alternative.
Is it available on AT&T right now?
I don't know.
I don't know. Okay.
I would guess so. I mean, but I don't know. You have to go to the store where you're looking at them or go to play.google.com and see. I could check real quickly for you.
Okay. Well, I'm a big Amazon fan. I was going to order it on Amazon if it was available.
Yeah, and you can,
like,
but I would start by going to Google and see what options there are. Let's see. LTE on AT&T, yes, $349.
Okay.
So that means Amazon will also have it. It ships in 1 to 2 business days. It's unlocked, which is nice. That means if you go to Europe, you can plug in a data SIM from a local carrier and continue to use it.
Okay.
These tablets are so inexpensive. The quality of the screen is superb.
Yeah, like I said, my wife's coworker, she has it. She's got to have one, and she can teach her how to use it. I'm not that tablet savvy myself, but I thought, well, hey. Let's go for it.
That's actually a good reason to get that particular one. I really want to underscore this. I mean, everything's so close nowadays. If you have a local expert that prefers one platform, it's fine to go with that platform just because you're going to have support and help.
Right.
So if there's a local expert who knows the Nexus 7, yeah, go for it.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, Leo, can I ask you one quick unrelated?
Yeah.
I have a Palm 3 with a lot of addresses and stuff. What's the best way to get that information off of there without having to manually do it into something more updatable?
Oh, man, that's history.
Yeah.
Now you're running up against that archive problem,
right.
I'll tell you.
Right.
So
is
it still work? Do you still have Palm Desktop? Can you still hook it up and get the stuff?
Yeah, I got an old XP computer, and it still syncs, and I got everything backed on external hard drive.
So now here's the time to open Palm, do the final sync with that classic Palm 3. By the way, loved it. Those are great.
Yeah.
I mean, there are better now, but that was great in its time. Do that last sync so that the desktop has everything, and then desktop has an export feature.
Okay.
And what you'll do is export it probably into something called CSV, comma separated values.
Oh, yeah, like for Excel or something.
Yes.
Okay.
And Google Contacts will import that.
Oh, okay.
Now, once you've done that, you're golden because you've got it in Google. That will work with an iPhone. That will work with an Android phone. It'll even work with a Windows phone. So you now have a kind of a lingua franca store that everything understands. And it's in the cloud, which is nice. That means you can go anywhere and check your contacts.
Okay. Well, thanks, Leo. I appreciate it. Love your Twit network.
My pleasure.
All the time.
Thank you. Twit.tv. Thanks for the plug. Nathan, I forgot. Did you say I should do an ad? Carbonite? Something like that? Anything?
Yes.
Carbonite. All right. Let me do that now. And then we'll come back and we will talk to Greg in San Jose. He wants to put iTunes on his Galaxy S3. 8888-ASK-LEO. That is the number to call. Greg is on the line from San Jose. Hi, Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just got a new Galaxy S3.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to figure out how to put my iTunes Music Library on it.
S3, iTunes Music Library. Double Twist. It's a free app. You could put it on your desktop, Mac, or PC, and you could put it on your phone. They even have something called Air Twist. That's not free. That's a few bucks. And that will sync your and any Android phone with your desktop over the Wi-Fi. But if you want to do it like you do it with your iTunes connected via cable, it'll work just fine, and that part's free. Double Twist is fabulous. Really like it. Interesting story. It was created by DVD John. You know who he is? He's the kid when he was, well, he's not a kid anymore, but when he was a kid in high school, John Lek Johansson cracked the copyright, the copy protection on DVDs. That's why they call him DVD John. He was just a kid when he did that. he's turned his he's only 29 now. He's turned his eye towards something a little more productive, a little more useful. Double Twist. I love it. I highly recommend it. Double Twist. Just go to the Google Play Store and download it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, MP3 players. Johnny Jett will join us at 33 and a third after the hour to talk travel, using technology to improve your travel. He gave me a lot of good advice before we left the country. He's good. But, you know, we had, remember we had Heather, the pickpocket expert, you know, the travel safety expert. And he was quick to say, and I think he's absolutely right, that most people, like 99.9% of the people you're going to run to are trustworthy, are fine, and not going to rip you off. It's that few people who do. We had no problem. Nobody tried to pick our pocket. Nobody tried to steal anything from us. What are you laughing at?
So would that be the one percenters?
Yeah, they're the one percenters. Stay away from them. My friend Mike Elgin, who has been doing this in spades for the last year and a half, Mike decided to become a digital nomad. He has, they sold their house. They took all, they got rid of everything or put it in storage, took two duffel bags and a suitcase, and have been living wherever they feel like, mostly like Greece and Europe, Barcelona, places like that, for the last year and a half. Mike is a writer, a good friend, writer for Computer World. He's a regular poster on Google Plus, and he, of course, he's a regular on our podcast. Well, he's written an article, which I recommend on Computer World, Digital Nomad Survival Tips You Can Use Anywhere. And I think this is a great article, not just about security, although he does talk a little bit about security. He got ripped off a number of times about choosing and using a backpack, backpack security. He has a video on the site of how you would typically lose a laptop abroad. You're sitting in a coffee shop, guy walks in and just takes it from in front of you and runs. So he talks a little bit about that, how to keep your laptop from being stolen. This is a good article. It's on computerworld.com. If you're traveling, I think this is great advice. And, of course, I took the advice that our detective gave us when he called into the show. I did not keep my wallet in a back pocket. I kept it. Actually, I wore a Scott E vest. You know, those are those technology-enabled clothing, they call it, that has a lot of pockets and stuff. And I always kept the valuables in an inside zipped pocket. Even if somebody bumped into me, jostled me, and tried to pick my pocket, they'd I think they'd find it very hard to get it out of a zippered pocket on the inside. So, we never ran into any situations at all. So I just want to underscore that it's, you know, it's safe to travel. We walked back streets at night and stuff. It was fun. I have, and people say, you shouldn't say this out loud. I've never been robbed in all my years of travel. I've never been, I had my pocket picked. I've never, you know, lost a bag or had a laptop stolen. I think it is pretty safe. And somebody told me, we had a guide walking us through Venice. She said, you know, Venice is very safe. You can walk around even at night. You don't have to worry. It's very safe. However, people's stuff do get stolen. Our friend Effin Dunn, Jason, who lives... Jason, you live in San Diego, am I right? He said his entire bag was stolen on Wednesday with, poor guy, an iPad, iPhone, HTC One, video camera, and still camera. Gone in 60 seconds. Poor Jason. So it does happen, and this is, I think, a good article to read. I agree with our detective. Don't be paranoid. Don't be paranoid, but it's a good idea to be a little bit cautious. Mike also writes about how to get good Wi-Fi, how to get good mobile data. He mentions this T-Mobile thing. This is such great news. How to keep your gadgets charged abroad, too. Good advice for travelers. Kisco Kid points out, okay, yeah, I guess I got robbed in a way. In New Orleans, I was there for the Super Bowl. I told that story, right? Lisa knew what was going on. She said, keep walking, keep walking. Guy walks up to me, says, I bet you I can tell you where you got those shoes. You ever heard this one, this scam?
No.
Bet you I can tell you where you got them shoes.
At the store.
I said, what? He said, will you give me $5 if I could tell you where you got them shoes? I said, what? Oh, yeah. He said, you got them on your feet.
Grown. I would punch that person in the face.
You know what? I gave him $5. What the hell?
Because you thought it was a decent joke.
It was funny. It made me laugh. It was worth $5. Shouldn't encourage it, I guess. I don't think of that as ripped off, just minorly conned. Doug in York, Pennsylvania, one of the nation's first capitals. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, that's right. Good job on your history there, York, Pennsylvania.
I have
the United States. Most people don't know that.
I have the key to the city of York, PA.
Ah, you do.
I don't know.
You that. There.
Susquehanna Faltzgraff is there.
Yes, they are. Yeah,
the China company. Yeah, I don't remember why I have the key to the city. I think when I was working at Tech TV, we made an appearance there, and the mayor gave us the key to the city. I think that's why.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I was going to use my regular town, which is a little south there, but I figure I'll use York because nobody will know my other town.
What's the other little town?
Redline, Pennsylvania.
Redline. Beautiful area. Really love that area. Yeah.
Yep. So is most of the country. I've been around a lot.
You know, we live in a beautiful country. You realize that when we travel, and we live in a very beautiful country. Not all of it. There's some bad parts, but in general, the U.S. is gorgeous.
Yes, that's right. That's
and absolutely. Not particularly populated. There's a lot of empty space.
Yeah, even states that you think are populated, there's parts that
absolutely.
Aren't.
Absolutely.
It's like get right outside, just outside New York City. It's like Jersey becomes abandoned.
Isn't that funny? People think of New Jersey, they see Jersey Shore, and that's what they think New Jersey is. It is. There's farmland. It is quiet.
Yeah, I mean, that's how a lot of states are, but that's awesome. Yeah. Anyway, I'm calling today because while you were on your trip, Samsung brought out their Note 3. And I knew you had a secret little mention of it in one of your shows.
I have one in my hot little hands. I mentioned at the beginning of the show I had another thing I wanted to show. I have a Galaxy Gear Watch and a Galaxy Note 3, which currently is the only phone that works with this smartwatch. And I'll be reviewing them on our review show on Tuesday before you buy, but I'll talk a little bit about them here on the show as well. I love the Note 3. Well, you know I was a Note fan, right?
Yes. I know you were a Note fan. And this is a big jump for me because I'm jumping up. And I did get one. I jumped up from the Evo 4G. So
welcome to the 21st century, my friend.
Well, yes. Sprint got a lot of money out of me as I kept paying that extra money on top of my bill after I paid my Evo off.
I'll give you the kind of the bottom line on the Note 3. This is the Note is a very successful form factor for the Samsung Galaxy folks. It's the giant screen Galaxy. The original Note was 5 inches. Then the Note 2 was 5.5 inches. And now this one is, 5.3 inches. This one's 5.5 and a half inches. But one thing they did with the Note 3 that I really like, they gave it a very high-res screen. Isn't that a gorgeous screen?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing, yes. Yeah, I get lots and lots of comments everywhere I go, and I'm not used to that. It's like, is that the new Note 3? Is that the new Note 3? Like, everybody wants to know about it, and they want to look at
really?
It.
Really? So people even know about it. So one of the things that's odd about it is
I'm at Chick-fil-A, and people are asking this. I feel a little leery about it in my phone.
Can I see that Note 3? So one thing that's odd about it is it has this padded back.
Yeah, the faux leather.
With stitching. It's got baseball stitching.
It actually it looks really nice.
I like it.
The thing is, I'm worried that over time, it's kind of like a faux leather computer chair. It'll wear out. You know,
maybe it's,
but I guess if you put a case over top of it, it'll be fine.
This is Samsung in a nutshell. They do things, strange things to differentiate.
It really does look nice though. And you know, I'm just worried that it's going to wear and it's going to like wear off.
The other thing I love about the Note line is it the stylus. But tell you what, let's take a break, I'd love to get your impression of it. Doug is on the line. We'll talk more about the Note 3 in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking before the break. This is germane to you because Heather, because you have a 4S, mm-hmm. and you're faced with an interesting conundrum. You could go to the 5S, the new iPhone 5S. You could show your loyalty to Apple, or you could take what's in the box.
What's behind door number two?
You could go. This could be an opportunity to go Android, and there's a number of different phones. But I think one you should probably look at is this Note 3, and I'll bring this in for you tomorrow as well. We were talking with Doug about it. He just got one. And you're happy with it, right, Doug?
I am. I'm very happy with it. So far, the only thing is I was very disheartened when I went to buy it. They said that in the U.S., there would, or at least they implied that there would be a 32 gig and a 64 gig version. And I went to Sprint and tried to get the 64, and they looked it up, and they're like, we have no record that that's going to be sold here.
Wow.
So I started looking around to other providers. Apparently, nobody is offering a 64-bit version in the U.S., and I found it very disheartening. Like, it's like, who are they to tell us? I mean, if you're going to make the phone, make it available.
It's really baffling because this memory in this phone is cheap. It doesn't cost them much to add to go to 64 gigs from 32 gigs. And I would think there's a demand for it. I know there's a demand for it. And they are selling a 64 gig version overseas. I don't understand why they're not offering it in the U.S. And this is not uncommon. A lot of this happens all the time. I don't understand it. Samsung does this a lot.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's like somebody else is telling you how much power you need or don't need.
Right.
And it's like, that's not their job to do that. It's kind of like, or at least make it available that I could order it.
Right.
You know, go to the site and order it. But as for the phone, I mean, people, you know, the size of it, I dropped an iPhone and Satchel on top of it the other day. It was almost comical how much bigger it is.
Oh, yeah. I'll do that tomorrow. Yeah.
I have really big hands. So really, for me, this is the first time I've had a phone that looks and feels right in my hand.
Yeah.
Back when people were using the all the little buttons for the what the heck is that? Can't think. They would send a text message, whatever that common phone was. I could never get my hands.
Oh, the BlackBerry. Yeah.
Yeah, the BlackBerry things. I was like, why would I want that? I can't even. I hit four or five buttons when I go to push my finger down. It doesn't work. So for this, it works great, and the stylus is just awesome for that. Now, I was going way back to the Dell Axum. I had a stylus back then. I was used to entering my grades and stuff when I'd enter grades. So the idea of getting a stylus now back on a phone, I really love.
Well, and a lot of people mock that stylus, and certainly it's not for everybody. But because the screen is so big, and they have special software for note-taking and handwriting, for sketching and so forth, and because it's a multi-touch, multi-pressure screen, the stylus is quite effective, I think, on the Note 3. The Note 3, we should be very clear, the Note 3 is a specialty phone. Samsung's philosophy is just to make every possible form factor, every possible size, every possible feature, and let you pick the one you want. This is kind of a direct opposite of Apple, which says, hey, we know what's right for you, and just buy our stuff. The Note is for people like you with big hands or somebody who wants a lot of screen real estate. I think the stylus is, you know, I gave my mom a Note 2 because she's an artist, and I thought, you know, she'll enjoy sketching on this, and I think she does. So,
I got one question for you. Any suggestions on rooting it?
It's so new that I don't know if it's. I don't, yeah, I mean, I don't generally root a new phone because unless you hate TouchWiz, the Samsung interface, and by the way, I do.
I kind of really want tethering without.
Yeah. Well, the thing to go do is go to XDA-developers and see if it's been rooted yet. I don't know if it has. When the phones are brand new, it takes a little while for them to get for the community to get together and figure out how to root it, and then for the ROM guys to add additional features. I don't think you need to root it to do tethering, do you? I think there are third party apps that let you do that.
I don't know that any of those work for a while either, so yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, the best thing, I don't know, XDA-developers.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that will give you, you know, that's where you keep up to date on that phone. They already have a forum section on it. And then when, as people get, you know, get it rooted, it'll, and, you know, watch carefully. You don't probably want to use the first rooting technology. Rooting, I should explain to folks, doesn't really, it's different in the Android world than in, say, in the iPhone world, where we call it jailbreaking. In the iPhone world, in order to add applications from anybody other than Apple, you have to jailbreak your phone. I don't recommend it. I really don't. First of all, most of the apps you want, in fact, I would guess all the apps you want are available anyway without jailbreaking. It's a little different in Android. Rooting is generally allowed and approved of. There are a few handset manufacturers and a few carriers who don't like it. But in general, all it does is gives you, you already, by the way, on any Android device can get apps from anywhere. You don't you're never tied to the Google Play Store. That's just a checkbox. You don't have to root it for that. But rooting gives you system administrative privileges, which are required to do things like install different firmware on the phone. I think rooting, in general, Google's attitude towards rooting Android is, go ahead, please do. It's an operating system. The reason it doesn't come rooted is just most consumers probably shouldn't have that kind of power. It's safer just to say, hey, if you can figure out how to root it, okay, then we'll let you do it. Johnny Jett's coming up. I usually root most of my phones, my Android phones, eventually. I have not rooted my Moto X, mostly because it's a pure Android experience or pretty close to it. I don't feel the need to. I immediately rooted the HTC One because I wanted to be, I wanted a more up-to-date version of Android. Immediately rooted the Galaxy S4. I don't know if you can root the Note 3 yet, but if you can, yeah, it's probably harmless to do so. 8888 Ask Leo. Johnny Jett's coming up, our travel guru. JohnnyJett.com. More of your calls too. Our website, I keep forgetting to mention this, techguylabs.com. And the reason it's important to keep that in mind is you don't have to write anything down. We are recording the show. We will put audio and video of the show up after the fact. We'll link each question and answer pair to that audio and video. We are taking notes. James DeRuvo is putting all the links in there and everything. So the whole idea is you can listen to the show hands-free, drive down the highway, clean the house, whatever you're doing. And then if you need something, it's all there, techguylabs.com. You'll also find a link there to our fabulous chat room, full of smart, intelligent, wonderful people. Tech Guy Lab, including poor effing Dunn. Sorry about your loss, effing Dunn. He's lost his backpack. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's here, ladies and gentlemen. The big old jet airliner literally just dropped off Johnny Jett in Toronto. Our travel guru, JohnnyJett.com, the place to go to get all that great advice for traveling better. I tried out Hotel Tonight and was very impressed by that, by the way. Great little app. Nice.
Oh, where'd you use it?
I didn't actually use it.
Okay.
I just checked the prices, and it was amazing, you know? You have to do it after 12 noon.
12 o'clock local time.
Neat little app. What it does is it's unsold rooms in hotels, and they get great discounts. And I know the hotels in the wine country up here pretty well, and very good, really neat.
Good.
So thank you for that.
I'm going to be up there soon, by the way. I got to tell you about that.
Oh, good.
So
good. Let me know, because I'd love to see you.
All right. I think I might bring my wife too.
I think you should. And by the way, thanks for one more thing. Thanks for the recommendation for Seabourn. That was the cruise line we went on. Boy, is that nice.
And it's my favorite thing to do. You know, if I had a vacation and I was going to spend my own money, that's where I would spend it. Just sitting on that back
so
porch.
So relaxing.
That Colonnade restaurant is
so beautiful. And it's small
warm
ship.
Weather.
Small ship, 450 people. We had a great best. We chose it partly because of the itinerary. You know, all the places we visited. It's so great. You unpack once, and then the hotel goes from town to town. It's an interesting way to travel, but you wake up. And you look out your veranda, and there is, you're sailing into Corfu. And there goes, you know, you just, oh, look. And you go out, and you have a cup of coffee, and you're sitting there, and you watch as the town of Corfu arrives. And then around 8:30, they go, okay, you can get off now. And you get off, and you're in Corfu.
Yep.
Then tomorrow, you're in Pylos, and then Milos, and Santorini. It's amazing.
I didn't think I'd like cruising, but I love it. And it's great for first-timers to Europe, because you get to see a lot of cities.
Right.
Without all the aggravation, and then you can go back and choose a destination you want to spend more time in.
I call it the Whitman sampler of travel, because that's the frustrating part is you're only in town for a day,
right.
In most cases. But it gives you a sense of a lot of different places, and then you can decide where to go back. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I got a good website for you.
Please, sir.
We've been gone for so long. I have so much catching up to do.
Have you been collecting material?
Yes, I have.
All right.
So, and by the way, I was traveling too. I was in Ireland, Northern Ireland and Ireland and London. I flew on the British Airways A380 and then British Airways 787, which I'll tell you about another time.
Ooh,
awesome.
The Dreamliner.
Yes.
Ooh. See, we were on an A380 leaving to go to Europe. And I was underwhelmed only because it's such a big plane. What is it, 550 passengers, something like that?
It all depends. It depends on the airline.
There are more people on the plane than there were on my cruise ship.
Was that Lufthansa?
Yeah, Lufthansa. And okay. It came out of SFO. There's only one gate at SFO that can handle it. It's such a big plane. And there's too many people. It was like a traffic jam. They had all this line control and stuff. It was just too many people trying to get on the plane. Once we were on the plane, it was fine. But getting on the plane was a nightmare.
Well, there should have been three lines, and they should have had three doors to go through.
Well, they should
have. They usually have one for upstairs.
Well, that was the problem, right? So they called us downstairs to get a ticket change because the seats didn't work on our seats. So there is an upstairs one. So we had to go downstairs and fight our elbow way through. The guards were yelling at me. I'm saying, I just need to get to the – it was horrible. It's too big a plane.
You let the flight attendants deal with that.
No, if your seat
doesn't work, you tell the flight attendants.
No, well, they called us and said, they said, Mr. LaPorte, Ms. Kensel, please come to the desk. But we're up here. Anyway.
All right.
I can't recommend the big Airbus, the 380, unless you're at an airport that can handle it. Let's put it that way. And San Francisco is not one of them.
All right. Well, I've actually flown on that Lufthansa, actually the first flight from Frankfurt to San Francisco. And I had a good experience.
I bet Frankfurt was fine. The Germans, they do great stuff.
Oh, and in Germany, by the way, there's no one at the gate. It's all automatic readers. Yeah. It scans your
boarding
pass.
That's probably why it worked better. Although, and this is off topic, so I'm going to get to your website in a second, but I do want to say there's different standards for queuing in different countries. And it's surprising because you think of England and Canada as being lands of queuers, people who know how to get in line. They're patient, they're docile, they're cattle. In fact, the only people who really seem to know how to get on an airplane are the people out of the U.S. In every other country, it's like they mob the gate. Everybody's just like, I want to get on.
I got a hard time believing that. I have a hard time. I bet you it was full of Indians.
No racism here.
Listen, I'm married to an Indian. I love Indians. But I'm just saying,
they don't
in
queue.
India, they do not queue.
No, there's cultures, right?
In China, they don't queue.
China, I remember standing in line to see Mao's tomb, and people would elbow by me. I said, I'm in line. What are you doing? No, but it's like there's a thing about getting in line. And anyway, can we fix that? Because it's getting bad in the U.S. too. Everybody's now mobbing the gate. They need to fix this.
Listen, going through the supermarket, I feel like I'm getting run over.
I know.
With the grocery store carts.
Yeah.
People are always in a hurry. So anyway, let me give you a good website. At least we have one takeaway.
Yes.
You ready?
Yes.
TheFlightDeal.com.
I like the name.
TheFlightDeal.com. So I always recommend Airfare Watchdog, which I love, and everyone pretty much knows about it. But here's a new one that is kind of similar, and no one really knows about it because it just came out. And you can sign up to their weekly newsletter. No one knows who does it. They're anonymous.
Is it Flight Deal or The Flight Deal?
The Flight Deal.
Okay.
This is very important. So, I just got their newsletter just now, and they always have really good deals. Today, they're okay. It's $1,000. And $995 from Los Angeles to Cape Town, which is a good deal on Virgin Atlantic. And there's also San Francisco to Bangkok for
$958.
That's pretty good.
Let's go to Thailand.
Sometimes they have incredible fares. Like they have one for D.C. to Muscat, Oman for a $790 round trip.
Wow.
And last week they had a round trip ticket for $595 to Italy.
So this is some mystery person doing this?
I think it's more than – I think it's a team because they – they're doing some good stuff, and they're new, so you got to keep an eye out on them.
$200 Chicago to Austin round trip, including all taxes. $250 United. $258 New York to Burbank round trip. Less than $300. That's amazing.
But what these guys are targeting more, they're more targeting frequent flyers or mileage junkies or just trying to get, you know, accrue as many points as they can. And they even say, okay, you can even do this route. You can fly to Cape Town and turn around right when you get there.
Well, for $398, I can leave San Francisco. I'm sorry, $386, fly to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and come back for $386. Yep. Bucks. Let's go.
You get, and you get your miles. That's what a lot of these guys care.
Really?
About.
That's what this is for, is miles?
Well, a lot of them are, but anyone can use it. I think it's great for consumers. That's why I'm mentioning it.
Yeah.
But they are targeting theflightdeal.com.
And where do these deals come from? I don't understand. Why? I mean, that's crazy price.
They have someone monitoring, you know.
This is like wires. Hotel Tonight. These are empty seats, basically. And so
No. It's not like Hotel Tonight.
Well, what is the deal? Why would Air France offer a round trip from Los Angeles to Jordan for $800? Why would they do that?
It's the different routes, you know. I bet you if you put in that same flight from, you know, whatever you just said, San Francisco to Paris, which is on the same plane, it will be a lot more expensive.
Ah.
And you're getting a free ticket to Jordan that you just mentioned.
Right.
So
I see.
It all depends on the routing.
Yeah. Well, this is a good one. I mean, you have to be, and you said this from day one, flexible. You know, you'll get the best prices if you're willing to say, hey, let's go to Puerto Rico tonight.
No, actually, these are actually some of them are for 2014.
Oh.
So they give you the dates. It's not just last minute.
Ah.
Man, we're done already? Holy
Johnny
cow.
Jet, that's because I wasted the time. JohnnyJet.com. You're the best, Johnny. We'll see you up here soon, all right? Leo LaPorte,
I hope so.
The Take tech care. Guy. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Last segment. Is that possible? We're almost done. Am I right? Am I reading the clock correctly? Wow.
Good Lord.
It went so fast. Ugh. So fast.
Hey, but we get to do it again tomorrow.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, that's, I can't wait.
Alan in Los Angeles, Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, Alan.
Time flies when you're having fun. What can I say, Leo?
I am the luckiest man in the world. I have the best job. You know, a lot of times you come back from vacation, you go, couldn't wait. I love it.
Very good. I'm a satisfied but slightly frustrated DSL Extreme customer because you talk about the Fusion service,
yeah,
which sounds absolutely wonderful. I can't get in my area.
Yeah, and that's why we don't do ads for Fusion. We do DSL Extreme ads on the national show, but we don't do ads for Fusion on the national show because it's only available in very selected areas. A phone company, I think, probably doesn't like it. The way this works, I have Fusion here in Petaluma. In some areas in Southern California, you can get it. DSL Extreme gives you not internet service and phone service, but it's different than the stuff you might get from your cable company. It's not VoIP. It's landline service. It's very weird.
And it sounds great, but my phone company begins with a V, and I think that's all I need to say.
And that's the problem. And to be honest, when people have frustrations with DSL Extreme, 9 times out of 10, it's not DSL Extreme's fault. The phone company hates independent internet service providers. They want you to buy the Verizon service or AT&T service or whoever your company is. They don't want you to be using a third party. The FCC requires it, and that's why they do it. They don't do it because they like to. They do it because they have to by law, but they don't have to be nice about it.
I understand. Otherwise, I'm a very happy customer. I thank you for the recommendation.
Good.
So here's my dilemma. I have an older dual-core machine, and I do have Windows 7 as my operating system, and I put in 4 gigs of memory, and as you know, in 32-bit, it only used 3 gigs of memory.
Right.
My question is it worth upgrading to 64-bit, because since I have the Windows 7 Professional disk, is it worth doing that? Am I not going to gain that much by going 3 to 4? What happens between 32? I don't even understand the difference between 32 and 64-bit. So maybe you can help me with that.
Boy, is that a great question, because I think a lot of people just go, well, it's twice as good. 64 bits is twice as good. And it's much more complicated than that. The number one advantage of a 64-bit operating system, first of all, you're using 64-bit hardware. The hardware is capable of handling data in chunks of as big as 64 bits. That's 8 bytes at a time. Most of the time it doesn't need to, and it doesn't, but it can if it needs to. The biggest difference is having that large number available to it means it can have a larger amount of addressable memory. It can see more memory. The limit on 32 8-bit operating systems is, as you pointed out, 4 gigabytes. You don't even get 4 gigabytes because some of that memory is used by the system. So you get less than 4, somewhere around 3 gigabytes. You'd have to, you know, so you're saying, I don't want to add memory. So you wouldn't get, you'd get 4 instead of 3.28 or whatever you're getting. I don't think that's going to make a huge difference.
Okay, so you think I should just leave things the way
I would. If you were willing to add more memory, it might make a difference. If you say, I want to go to 8 gigs, then yes, go to 64 bits.
Can't put in more memory. That's the problem.
I wouldn't worry about it. It's not. Look, you already have a 64-bit version. It came with Windows. It's not going to be a big improvement in speed, and it is kind of a pain to reinstall Windows. The next time you reinstall, do 64-bit.
Sounds good to me. The other quick thing I'll mention to you is that have you ever done in your broadcasting career a food show?
I have.
Because you describe things that make them so appetizing. I just cannot wait. Even the way you describe the soup that you eat for lunch just sounds so good.
That's not from doing a food show. That's because I'm fat. I love food. I'm a gourmand.
I'm just saying that's another one of your talents.
Thank you. You're very kind. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it. Take care. Our Gizwiz is here. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He is trim. He is lean. He is ready to do a show. And we're going to talk to him and get a gadget in just a moment. But first, a word from our friends at Carbonite Online Backup. You better believe when you're traveling, you are at risk of losing everything. That laptop can be stolen. Worse, many laptops, hundreds of thousands every year, get left behind at the airport security. It's so common. What would you lose if you lost your hard drive? If you're a business, what would you lose if you had a fire and everything, including your backups, got destroyed? You got to have online backup. You got to have Carbonite. Automatic, continuous backup to the cloud. You can access your data anytime on any computer. Just log on to your Carbonite account or use their free apps on your smartphone or tablet. Whenever you need to get to your data, it's there. And when you, if the worst happens, if disaster strikes, you've got it. It's so easy, it's so affordable. $59.99 a year for everything on that computer. That's less than $5 a month, Mac or PC. And for businesses, people with more computers or external hard drives, they've got also very affordable flat rate yearly plans. Try it today. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo. You'll get 2 weeks free. You don't need a credit card if you decide to buy 2 months free with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, is here. He is the Giz Whiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you, sir?
I am very well, my friend.
Good.
You good, like good, cruises, good. Too. You've been on the Cunard, haven't you?
Yeah, the QE2 and the QM, the Queen Mary. I guess it's Queen Mary 2.
How do you like Cunard? Because we love Seabourn, but I'm thinking Cunard might be kind of fun.
Yeah, Cunard, you know, I like their ships because even though they're very modern ships, the interior is very Art Deco.
They're classic.
They're very classic.
Yeah,
they're
like
very
that.
Classic. And they shy away from attracting very young kids. And what they did is they made
Can
the
I say
entire-
something? Every cruise is full of blue-haired old people. That's who does cruising.
Okay.
Young people. Where are you going to see young people?
No, you're absolutely right.
I was a young person on this cruise.
No, I know. The same with me. I when I boarded the ship, this old lady said, "Sonny boy, could you help me pick up my bag?" I said, "Lady, if you call me Sonny boy, I will personally press all the clothing in your suitcase." What are you kidding?
But the upside is you don't mind wearing a bathing suit at the pool because everybody looks awful.
Yeah, it's called the look awful pool.
Yeah. Exactly. So what do you got for us?
You know, I have a neat little gadget from SanDisk. It looks like one of their regular flash drives, but it's called the SanDisk Connect. And this is a little guy. It comes in 16 gigabytes and 32 gigabytes. So drag files to it.
I'm holding one up right now.
Okay. No, you're holding up.
What's this?
This is the SanDisk. I forget
what
that
is. It says Connect.
I know, but I'm talking about the Connect flash drive.
Oh, what is that?
And you have the more deluxe model that you're showing. My guy looks just like a regular flash drive.
Oh, it's like a USB key.
Exactly.
But what is it? It has Wi-Fi built in.
It has Wi-Fi built in. I think it does pretty much all the things that yours does. Drag movies to it. Then it makes its own hotspot. Up to 8 people can sign on to it. You can stream 3 different kinds of content to the people who are in it. Actually, Dennis and I had to go to Boston for a wedding, and on the train back, it was so packed we couldn't sit together. And I thought, oh, I wish I had put the app on Dennis's iTouch, because he could have watched the movie I was watching, even though we were several seats apart. You can broadcast up to 150 feet away from the device. And I don't know what the price is on yours. The Kinect flash drive is $59 for the 32 gigabytes or $49 for the 16 gigabytes. So I would certainly, if you would like this kind of thing, you know, spend the extra 10 bucks for twice the memory. And so you download the app, drag files. I drag some Turner Classic Movies over to this. And then bring up your the Galaxy 4, search for the Kinect wireless. And there were all my movies. And you can just sit there and watch them. And they're not on your phone. They're on that little drive.
So I brought it with us on the cruise, so we'd have...
Oh, did you really? Yeah, oh, okay,
additional
great.
Media content.
Nice.
It's really good.
Very
now,
nice.
Yours, does it plug into the side of the computer?
When you're downloading the
oh, okay. So it's not a flash drive in the sense that you could put it in the USB port.
Oh, you can. Yeah, oh, that's you how can. You drag... Yeah, that's how you drag files to it.
All right.
Plug it in. And you charge it via the USB port.
Oh, that's cool.
And then you get I think it's 4 hours of streaming once
very
it's
nice.
Charged. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. Dick DiBartolo is Mad's maddest writer. It might be why you recognize the name. For years, he's been great doing those great movie parodies. How'd it go on Turner Classic Movies?
You know what? We had a great time. I did four movies. Robert Osborne was kind and said, so you appear on twit.tv.
He gave us a plug. That's nice.
He gave you a plug. And at the end, he said, you know, tell us again where your Gizwiz show is. So I got
awesome.
To do it again.
Yeah. And Dick, you'll find online, play the What the Heck Is It contest at gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Bye.
Thank you all for being here. See you next week. Next time, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.